And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. This is the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. Onto Waveland, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys had the same reaction I did, but in this just concluded Rockies series, which included a pivotal three-run home run by Patrick Wisdom, massive blast out to left field. In the call, it was like, oh, that one's out, Onto Waveland. And I was like, that's right. That's the name.
That's the name. I got some tweets. Got some tweets about it.
There you go. Yeah, what is the sign out there now? It's not Nuveen anymore, is it?
No, it is.
The one there in left?
I don't know the name. I can picture it, but I can't remember the name of the company. There's like four. Like,
Cubs aren't hitting enough home runs to left.
What the hell?
Yeah. Well, in any case, that has made it, and the bleacher expansion has made it a little, you know, used to be like, what, one out of every three homers to left field was Onto Waveland back in the day, in Sammy's day?
Sure.
I feel like it was. I feel like it wasn't as big a deal to hit it out onto the street. And now it seems like it's considerably more rare.
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, they expanded how many feet out, right?
Yeah, that's true. And it wouldn't have to be much.
They have to make room for the plaque.
10 feet. He had to get it in there. He had to. Just that's going to be an Easter egg in the next like 30 episodes. We'll be talking about, like, you know, teeth issues, and Sahadev will be, or Mooney, I don't want to cut you out. They'll slide in and they'll be like, and speaking of plaque, yeah. So the actual contents of the plaque did circulate this week, by the way. I assume you guys probably saw it at the ball. Where is it located, actually?
I haven't taken the time to go. I honestly haven't gone to look.
You mean it's not 500 feet large and you can't miss it? Surely it is, from how everybody was discussing it. I thought it was like replacing the old scoreboard. Yeah, I don't know. I saw the pictures. I read the content of it, and
a lot of words.
It's a lot. It is very long, and it is very charitable to the stewards of Wrigley Field and the saviors of it. I will agree, it is a little much, but it's a little plaque. Who cares? God, get out of here. So this is plaque talk here at The Athletic. All right, so speaking of that Cubs-Rockies series, the Cubs won the series. They can't pull off a sweep. Even the Rockies on the road, who I saw they flashed on the marquee broadcast, that the Rockies' difference in winning percentage between home and road this year is not just the biggest difference in baseball history. It is the biggest by like 100 points.
Holy crap.
Now, that's 100 points of difference between home winning percentage and road winning percentage, and theirs is 100 points bigger than the next biggest difference in history. I mean, they are so far beyond the pale of difference between road and home that, like, it is actually a little shocking that even this Cubs team could not pull off the sweep. That's how bad the Rockies are on the road.
Yeah, I don't want to get into Rockies analysis too deep, but I don't know how do you build a team there? Like, that's got to be one of the most frustrating operations. Like, I know they've had some pretty poor front offices, especially the most recent one. But that's really jarring to think about. And just I don't know how you make it. There's the mental aspect and just the reality of the physical aspect of playing it in Denver. That's got to be crazy. I'm sure people have ideas, and hopefully they get a nice, smart president or GM to take care of that, because that's got to be an interesting project to try and win in Colorado.
It's hard to believe it was only 3 years ago when they played that crazy wild card game at Wrigley Field, and I went back to watch some of the clip from that 13th inning just to like remember what Wrigley Field is like when the Cubs are good. And this is just a totally random aside, but I guess that's kind of what we're here for. I thought it was funny that on the ESPN broadcast, Trevor Story leads off with a 2-out single, and Jess Mendoza calls that a win for the Cubs because Story's the most potent hitter in that lineup, you know, which is true. And then A-Rod points out how KB was playing a no doubles defense, so no harm, no foul. But Story gets on base, and then it's like two more hits, and the Cubs, not only season is over, but it's like this avalanche of pressure on Joe Maddon. Theo declares the offense is broke. The window is over. It was just like an amazing, like, if you could time capsule that right before Story gets that and you hear, no harm, no foul, that's a win for the Cubs. Then just everything collapses on the franchise. Thanks, YouTube.
So it is, it's Trevor Story and Jess Mendoza and Alex Rodriguez's fault. Now we've pinpointed it. It was funny when the Cubs signed Tony Walters as one of the 47 backup catchers this year. Of course, he got the hit that won that game. And I was surprised that there wasn't more hostility. You know, like, I had hate in my heart for Tony Walters because even as that game played out and the Cubs lost and that hit happened, I swear to you, this isn't just hindsight. I did have that feeling of like, shit, that was it, wasn't it? Like, that's, and we did. We went into that offseason and we knew things were changing and that it wasn't for the better. And indeed, that 2019 season was just such an ugly slog and then a terrible ending. And 2020 doesn't even count. And even if it did count, it ended with those ridiculous losses to the Marlins and the fake playoffs. And then 2021 has happened. And of course, we know what it is. So, I mean, again, like, I appreciate what you tried to do for the Cubs this year, Tony, but Tony Walters, I will always think of you as like the guy who killed these Cubs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, what the 10 inning game last night, which was a 10. Yeah, it was 10 innings.
It was painful
from the 7 inning game. I did want to I wanted to touch on. So, probably not quite as thrilling as the 13 inning affair in the wild card game, but it was sort of like, it did get to a point, at least for me, where it was sort of a ridiculous, humorous thing to be following, particularly like, so I know, because it's my job to know, a lot of Cubs fans are not currently paying super close attention to games. You know, they'll see highlights when there are highlights to see. And what was very funny was to see Ian Happ's game-tying three-run homer get circulated as a highlight. And if you watch it, there's no fans in the stands. It looks like a 2020 video. And it's because they had been moved out from the rain and the lightning. But what I see is everybody passing it around who isn't like watching the games anymore, and they're like, oh man, I knew attendance was bad, but I didn't know there was nobody at the games. And I just didn't even have the heart to correct. Usually I'm such a like a well actually person when it comes to stuff like that. I didn't have the heart. I was just sort of like, okay, whatever, have your fun with that. And then what, you watch the later clips and suddenly there's a bunch of people there, and it's what, they came in off the street. They were like, oh, it's extra innings, I'm going to slide into that ballpark. Anyway, that's my take on the ridiculous game.
I mean, I will say that I was in a good mood yesterday, a good mood for going into a doubleheader that I knew I was going to be at both games since they cruelly started Justin Steele in the second game. I couldn't just bounce after the first game like the last time Justin Steele pitched in a doubleheader. I agree with you that the fan stuff was kind of funny after the in-hap home run, and it all just kind of all of it kind of became like comedic to me. I was just like, really, this is happening? Like, Ian Happ's gonna start hitting home runs again? And apparently it was a home run in no other ballpark other than Wrigley Field, according to some tweet I saw that kind of like shows how shows like what whether it's a homer in how many ballparks, right? Which just is like, it's another data point for like, oh, Ian Happ's getting hot. Except if that was on the road, that would have been a harmless fly out to what it would have ended the game. I don't even remember when he hit it.
There was one out at the time. So it would have probably.
Yeah, it would have been close to ending the game. So, I mean, I'm sure I'll write an Ian Happ story soon enough, but we're all going to write the, is Ian Happ getting hot? Is Ian Happ back here? And maybe this is just the luck bouncing back his way after that first month where he couldn't get any luck. I don't know. But this is, I don't want to read too much into an Ian Happ 2 weeks hot streak here.
Well, Brett, you teed this up before we started recording. What do you want to do with the Cubs outfield? What do you need to see here over the last 2 weeks? Besides needing to see people in the stands again and lecturing fans on social media about attendance policies, what do you want to see in the outfield next year?
Yeah, well, I wanted to take an opportunity to talk about the group that's here, the group that could be here, the sort of, I just feel like, the infield discussion, particularly because Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant were traded away, that's been a little easier to dig into and maybe more interesting for people. And then you've got, like we talked about in the last episode, a really compelling infield free agent class. And I feel like we aren't talking much about the outfield, both what's going on now in it and what the Cubs are going to do next year. And I just thought it was interesting against the backdrop of, like Sahad have referenced, a lot of people starting to talk about Ian Happ again because, you know, conceitedly, he's had a blistering hot 10 days. I mean, the results have been overwhelming. And you can do that thing where you extend it back like 20 days and create, and the numbers are still pretty good going back 20 days, but like the 10 that you're adding on their own are sort of not that great. But he is elevating the ball more. He, you know, when he was struggling this year, it was ground ball rate was nearly 60% or something crazy like that. And that's from a guy who is like a launch angle guy. Like you could tell he was just not connecting with the ball well at all. And this period of time where he's succeeding, we can make comments about the lack of pressure now or whatever. I don't really want to get into that stuff, but it made me curious, like, we had gotten to a point where, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, teeing up a discussion like, is Ian Happ potentially becoming a non-tender candidate? That wasn't a crazy thing to like wonder about. It wasn't definitive at that point because, of course, there was still two months of the season left and he's had success before. And that just got me wondering, like, is he doing enough now? And if he continues to play reasonably well the rest of the year, does that become a silly conversation and you sort of get back into a mode where it's like, oh yeah, one of the outfield spots locked down. It'll be in Happ somewhere in one of those spots. And that was sort of the predicate for this conversation. But Boy, I got lots of thoughts on Jason Hayward as well, on Rafael Ortega and the free agent class and the Cubs prospect pool. I got a lot of thoughts on the outfield that we can sprinkle in without, but I did want to start on Ian Happ in terms of like, is there anything he can do from here that changes the way the Cubs will think about what his role is or presence on the team for next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's dangerous in general, right? For the Cubs to take too much away from anything from these final 2 months. Like, it's a time for evaluation, but I think it's more than just pure results that you're evaluating, I think. I mean, I guess that's always the case, but especially now, it's really, like, you really have to dig into... And they'll know, right? What types of changes has Ian Happ made? What has he been working on? What did click? Did something change mechanically? Is he working on something that finally felt right? They have all that information, right? This isn't like free agency where you're trying to, you know, figure these things out. They should know all this stuff and have they have the most information on Ian Happ of any of the 30 teams, right? That should be the case. So yeah, I think that I do think he can do enough this month to make that a non-factor, a non-tender, like not something that is really considered. I do think he can do something over these next 5 weeks. I just don't want to get carried away with anything. But I think the reality is of what this team is going to be, what their winter is likely going to be, how many holes they have to fill. If he does well enough in September, yeah, maybe you just have to kind of go into next season and say, like, give him a spot and give him another shot. Unless they just feel like it's time to move on. Like, they, you know, maybe that wasn't the case with Schwarber as much. That was more of a money thing, I think. But sometimes you just have to say, like, I don't know what his ARB number is. I think it would be around 5 or 6 million. Yeah. So, will they look at it as, can we spend that $5 million better elsewhere? I think with the number of holes you have, that's a risky bet just because there's a lot of free agents that they're going to have to sign. There's a lot of holes that they're going to have to fill. There's a lot of players that they're going to have to convince to come play for the Cubs in a year that probably won't look like one of those obvious 90-plus win teams. But there's also plenty of playing time, and there's also plenty of roster spots to make. So yeah, I think Happ, you can look at him as someone that has a chance to pencil in a spot for next year. I think the rest of those guys, when you talk about Ortega, when you talk about Hayward, yeah, those are decisions you're gonna have to make. Ortega is a perfectly fine fourth or fifth outfielder. You know, like, I really like the way he plays. He doesn't strike out a lot. He can handle center field. He's a veteran. He clearly works his butt off to get to where he needs to be. I'm curious, you know, Craig Dykeman, I don't think is tearing up AAA right now, but I'd like to see what he can do as well. At some point, you know, the AAA season ends, right? Or maybe it got extended longer. It did get extended longer, but I don't know how deep into the season it is.
Yeah, it only ends about a week before the big league season.
Okay.
Now.
Well, either way, like, let's see. I mean, Dykeman is going to be a part of the discussion, right? Like, he's a major, he's basically like ready, you know, quote unquote, for the major leagues. So they got to see what they have with him, but he's just going to be one of those guys in a competition, right? It's going to be interesting to see what they do over the winter, but yeah, Happ, I think Happ is the one that you have to say, like, is this a guy that can do something over the final few weeks to say, like, okay, we have one spot filled.
I think Happ's on the bubble no matter what. I mean, I don't think maybe he can improve his standing and maybe it's a tougher decision, but I'm looking at, you know, Adam Duvall last year was a free agent. That guy signed for $5 million. It was structured in a different way over 2 years with a buyout. Dude's got 27 homers and 86 RBIs. Like, I don't see how, and he has a pretty long track record of production at the big leagues. Not saying this guy's like going to fix a broken offense or is like a number one priority, but there are lots of different ways to spend money here. And I think the outfield is one of those areas where they're probably going to cut corners, particularly given the options at shortstop. There could be a Wilson Contreras extension, you know, coming this offseason. or if they don't, they're going to have to really scramble to fill perhaps their most important position. And there's like, outside of Kyle Hendricks, I don't see anyone on this pitching staff who's like locked in for next year. Maybe Cody Hoyer. I mean, other than that, it's Kyle Hendricks and a like, what, 11, 12, 13 question marks on your pitching staff. So to me, if I have $5 million, is that like five interesting relievers? Is that another starting pitch? I don't really know what the market's going to bear. And I think that's going to probably work against Hap in this case. Maybe they try and press him to do one of those like pre-tender type deals. I think there are certain safeguards in place to where a player's salary can't be cut too much. And he's a union rep, so he's not going to like be all into making that many sacrifices. I mean, I like Ian Happ maybe on like a prove it deal, you know, for shorter dollars. You're not guaranteeing him 500 plate appearances next year, maybe in that case. But I just think there, we've seen these last couple of off seasons, how many interesting guys, whether it's a Jock Peterson, a Duvall, that just kind of linger out there. The guys that aren't like, that don't play premium defensive positions, that aren't top of the market talents. Oh, some interesting players could follow their Cubs way. And that's why I think they can't really be locked into Ian Happ, whether or not he gets hot the rest of the way.
I think that's all fair. I think, what's tough for me is less whatever he does over the next 5 weeks. It's what he had done the 4 years before this. And I think that what you might run into if, and this is why you weren't setting up this comparison, you know, if for those who try to set up like a Kyle Schwarber parallel, one major difference that I would point out, not just the dollar difference, Schwarber was in line to make like $10 million. But he was going to be a free agent after one more year. That was it. That was sort of the final year on him. Happ has two more years if the Cubs want it. And so like that is a bit of a value add to have that extra control, that on the chance that this year proves to have been a fluke and he gets that time next year, he'll turn 27. It's not like he's ancient or anything. And, you know, it takes a step forward. Okay, well, then you got that extra year. So I feel like in free agency, for example, if he got a one-year deal, there would be a little bit of a premium on it because he does have that extra year before he can reach true free agency. But that all that said, I agree with your guys' general sentiments, and I think he falls, I guess this is going to become a theme, that he falls into that group of guys that I think if you retain him, sure, you can think about him as he's a guy on the team. But you can't think about him as like he's going to be our this guy. So we can't do anything else that might interfere with him being this guy. He's just around. And when we talk about, if we shift this a bit to the other outfield options, of which Sadiv went through primarily them, although Michael Hermosillo perhaps going to be in that conversation as well, where he falls and Rafael Ortega and Jason Hayward, for me, the consideration is less about like, are they going to be starter X, you know, in the outfield next year? Because I think pretty clearly the answer is no. No, there's nothing that can happen between now and the end of the season that should make that decision. Instead, the question for me with those guys has always been, do they do enough to show me, yeah, going to hang on to you on the 40-man roster all offseason? Because I know this gets a little too into the weeds for some folks, but here's the reality. The Cubs, by virtue of a lot of the trades they made, which brought in some prospects that were already on the 40-man roster, but who are very far away from the big leagues. That's part of how they were able to get some additional talent. And the extreme depth that they've built up, they have a really sizable list of prospects that are potential Rule 5 picks. And what you're going to see is the potential that they've got to protect a shitload of players in November. And it's going to make those decisions about those fringy guys a lot harder, just in terms of keeping them on the 40-man roster. And so, like, I think, you know, Ortega is a perfect example. I don't think anyone would disagree. He looks now to be, yeah, good fourth, fifth outfielder. I'd like him on my roster. And I think a lot of teams would feel that way. The question is, do you think you can get him or a guy like him late in free agency, maybe even on a minor league deal at that point? Or at least just sort of you're punting the decision until later in the offseason when you already know You've got your 40-man situation sorted out. You know where there's a spot. We've seen the Cubs do this before with some of their relievers that, you know, I've sort of picked this up the last few years. It took me a while to sort of come to this realization, but every year, end of the season, we would see the Cubs part with like a interesting controlled reliever. We're sort of like, why didn't they just keep him? He's not going to cost that much in arbitration. Just keep him. And they were trying to see if they could open up a 40-man spot and then bring that guy back later. We saw it with Tapera last year. They did it with Winkler for a brief period of time. Like, it's a strategy. And so I do think that that's going to be, now, Jason Hayward, totally different story. I think once you separate that relationship, it's probably over. But to me, it's all about the 40-man spots for those
guys. Yeah, it's going to be complicated, I think. You're right. I saw you, I'm not sure if that was you or someone else on Bleacher Nation that wrote that post about the 40-man stuff. I didn't have time to read every single player, but I skimmed it and saw that there's quite a few decisions that they have to make and names that, you know, that seem like, oh, you may not want to lose that guy or that guy's getting interesting, especially some of these random dudes like the Nelson Velasquez's of the world who are suddenly like raking. And it's like, wait a second.
Blowing up.
This guy's old enough that some terrible team would just keep him on their roster all season just to see if this is real. So you don't want to lose a guy like that could be a contributor down the road for a winning team when he's still in his early 20s at this point. I think you're right. I think that's probably the biggest thing that we have to keep an eye on. When you bring that up, what that tells me is someone like Ortega is not going to be on the 40-man roster. Like, they're going to have to make a move with him. They're going to have to make, like, listen, I like the Michael Hermosillo story, and I want to believe that this guy's figured something out. He's striking out like 60% of the time right now. It's only like, what, 15 at-bats? But he's striking out a lot. And
15 sporadic bats. No chance to get his feet under him.
I know you're on the Michael Hermosillo train.
Yeah, I'm pretty toot-toot all aboard that if he would just get the opportunity.
I would tell you, but David Ross's reasoning on that, I don't think it's going to ease anyone's anger about that because it's basically like I need to get Ian Happ right. And there was something. Listen, so I asked him within my mind, it was supposed to be like, we're done with our pregame session. And this is one of those, just be honest with us with our mics off. And everybody else kept their mic on. So this was on the record, and I think some people wrote it, but I was thinking, like, give me more.
That's a funny, it counts as, sorry, you've got to whisper it to me, because it counts as off the record for you.
Yeah, right. Record, so when the manager gets up and starts to, like, you know, like okay, we're all good, and you just kind of, like, put your recorder to the side and say, like, yeah, I was just wondering, and then, like, that's supposed to be an off the record thing. Like, everybody else kept their recorders on. And so anyway, see, he basically said something about Hayward too. I didn't record it, so I wanted to go back and listen, but it was like, is he really saying Hayward here? Is this really a reason to not play Michael Hermosillo? It's fine. Like, that's, he's got to do what he needs to do to keep the clubhouse in order and to do, like, he's got to, I think there's also an aspect of, I have to try and win still, try and win and do my best and give these guys opportunities and play matchups. And what I put people in their best positions to succeed. He's doing multiple things at once here, trying to keep a clubhouse in order, trying to look towards the future and not lose the integrity of the game. Right. He wants to win. I know I joke about it on Twitter all the time about like Jed wants that high draft pick, but you know, that's not how David Ross's brain works. It can't. And I like that about him, but I also get why you and, you know, frankly, I would like to see what Michael Hermosillo has. I just, like, when it comes down to it, I think all these fringy guys are going to end up off the roster, off the 40-man by the end of the season, like when the time comes, right? I mean, who are they keeping, like, out of these guys? It's like Patrick Wisdom, right? That's the guy that's...
Patrick Wisdom, maybe because he can play defense.
He's like a really good defense. Damn good defensive third baseman, right?
Yeah. I think with Frank Schwindel, like I'm pretty close to buying the bat already because of the way he succeeds.
He doesn't strike out,
and yet he's still destroying the ball.
He can't hit anything but fastballs.
He's the one who kind of. Oh well, we'll have
I
to
think
dig
I
in on
like
that,
I
don't know why do they keep throwing him fastballs.
They just haven't adjusted yet. I looked this up. I wrote like very brief like this. I didn't do like deep dive analysis on these guys, but I wrote like quick blurbs on a few, you know, fringy position players, and he was one of them. And I looked at his numbers, and it was, I'm pretty sure he's hammering fastballs and not doing anything else with any other pitches. And at some point, I think that's going to catch up, or, you know, maybe he's a diamond in the rough. I don't want to rule anything out. These guys are working their butts off and trying to make things happen, and they are performing. You know, that's the weird thing. Like some of these, the offense is performing, yeah. But I mean, how do you, there's so many spots to put in that you need to add. How do you decide that Frank Schwindel deserves it? Is Rivas on the 40 man? He's going to have to be, right?
Well, here's the problem. This is, that's what I was going to say. The problem for Schwindel is even if you think, okay, I think maybe the bat is untapped and it's legit. You've got Alfonso Rivas at Iowa ready to go. Looks like a guy who you really need to give big league at-bats to. He can really only play first base. They've experimented him in the corner outfield spots. I don't know that there's much there. And then you've also now got Jared Young, who people kind of forgot. But he was the Cubs minor league player of the year
a few years ago. Right? And he just had a terrible 19.
Wasn't healthy. 18. Terrible 19. And there were health issues that year. Then the pandemic. And then he's back this year and he's healthy. And he just crushed his way up to AAA, where he's continuing to crush. He's also kind of like a mostly first base guy. Both of them, Rule 5 eligible. Both of them, definite risks to be selected. I'll never say anybody who's like a first baseman, I'll never say is a surefire going to get picked. But in an era where we think we're expanding all of baseball to the DH, you know, there's a chance that teams will pluck those. And so you're left with, could you really roster three first base-ish only bats?
And Young and Rivas are lefties, I believe, right? So if you want to go the Giants route, right, and do like a platoon, and we should probably like, there was a, I need to read this article. Did you read the Fangraphs article about how they're platooning and it's not just like left right matchups? Someone messaged me about it. I don't know how I even heard about it now that I think about it. Like someone was talking about it and basically saying they're doing a really unique way of platooning. It's not just purely left right. It's this guy hits pitches in this area of the plate, and that's what this pitcher does, and different stuff like that. And I don't think that's groundbreaking, but to be able to pull it off so well is something we haven't seen. Because I mean, I know Madden, I know talking to hitting coaches and game planning coaches, they've talked about stuff like that. Platoon isn't just left and right. It's this guy hits the high fastball and this is what this guy does. Well, okay, now we're talking about specific zones of the plate, and this guy hits this really well and this other guy hits this really well. We're going to platoon them, and that works out well. I think they're doing it with like Darren Roof and someone else, I think that would be interesting. Can they pull that off with like a Rivas and Young? Can they pull that off with Rivas and Schwindel? I joked about it in my little Schwindel tidbit that I wrote. It's like I'm not convincing myself that a Rivas Schwindel platoon is going to lead to a winning season. I can't do that to myself. I cannot do that. But hey, here we are.
Schwivas. Trademark. All right, we'll leave it there. Good talk there on the outfield, and you know, it's inevitable that it bleeds into this other stuff, you know, that because the Cubs have so many potential vacancies and then so much work to do filling them while managing the 40 man with these prospects and fringe guys, that it all becomes one conversation. So thank you folks for listening. This is On to Waveland, where Patrick Wisdom parks his dingers. And I'm Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. And that is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic. We'll be back at you next week. And Cubs going to do a little American League-style baseball this weekend. White Sox and Twins. Potential Wilson Contreras return as a DH. So keep an eye out for that. and we will talk to you again soon. Take care, folks.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.